First case on our calendar is 03613 Green Cove Resort, One Owners Association versus the Public Utilities Commission. Mr. Lang.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Fred Lang. My co-counsel is Dennis Lyle. We're with the firm of Fuller & Henry, and we're here today on behalf of the Green Cove Resort One Owners Association. If it please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, watch your time there.
Thank you. This morning, I'd like to focus on three critical issues. First, the quantification of the amount of contributed capital. Second, the absolute necessity of ordering separate rates for the condominium owners. And third, the need to distinguish the KECO case so as to allow for a refund under the unique circumstances of this case. First, with respect to the issue of contributed capital, there is no question that the developer in this case has recovered the cost of the sewage treatment plant from the condominium purchasers. The commission so held, and the utility did not appeal that decision. The only question is, how much did the developer collect? As a result of a faulty assumption, the commission has significantly understated the amount of that recovery. In the mid-1980s, the developer's planning document showed that 100% of his sewage costs would be recovered when 747 units were sold. However, in 1987, the developer changed that plan. In that year, he revised his assumptions, and he concluded that his costs would be recovered when the 570th unit was sold. This number was then utilized to allocate a portion of the treatment plant, and a portion of the related facilities to each condominium sale. For 15 years, this 570-unit number was utilized in the developer's income statements, his balance sheets, his tax returns, and in the financial statements he circulated to his investors.
When you were selling the units, your allocation, the assumption that seemed to be made by the tax commissioner was the amount per unit was allocated to 747, but in reality, you actually allocated the amount to the 570 units?
Justice Stratton, we didn't perform the allocation. The developer and his accountants did,
well,
but yes, it was done based on 570 units. And that was consistently done on all of the developer's financial statements, tax returns, everything. It was the same number that was used. Quite frankly, the commission simply made a mistake when it used the 747 number. The commission made an assumption, but that assumption is flatly contradicted by the evidence of record. In 1987, the developer changed his original plans, and he consciously decided that he would recover his costs over the sale of 570 units. At this point in time, the developer was no longer in the planning stage. Construction of the condominiums had started, the first units were being sold. The developer knew what cost he had incurred in building the treatment plant and in building the related facilities. And perhaps most importantly, at that point in time, the developer knew exactly what he was charging the condominium purchasers for their units. And that information is contained in the supplement at page 105. Thus, he was fully aware of all of these facts, all of these circumstances, and he consciously decided he would recover his cost over the sale of 570 units. For 15 years, he used that number. Now, 15 years later, the commission comes along in the complaint case in 2002, and they attempt to reverse the developer's decision to use 570 units. In effect, the commission is telling the developer he can't do what he actually did. Without intending to be insightful or in any way disrespectful, this is a ludicrous position to take. The commission cannot change a historical event by making an assumption 15 years after that historical event occurred. In summary, these are the facts of record on this issue. The developer consciously decided to recover his cost over the sale of 570 units. His outside accountants, Ernst & Young, approved that decision in 1987. Mr. Fall, who was the general manager and treasurer and chief accountant for the developer at the time, so testified, and the commission specifically found Mr. Fall's testimony to be credible. Secondly, Mr. Efron, who was the resort's outside accounting and rates expert, testified that 570 units was the only number that could be utilized if a simple ratio analysis was to be performed. Again, without trying to be repetitive, this 570-unit number was used in all of the developer's financial statements, not just his tax returns, as the commission has implied. And finally, no witness offered any testimony or any evidence in this proceeding that supported the 747 number. The only mention of that 747 number was when witnesses mentioned that that was used in the original planning documents prior to the developer changing to go to 570 units. Clearly, the commission's decision is against the manifest weight of the evidence, and it must be reversed. This brings me to the issue of separate rates. I believe that the case is equally compelling that the condominium owners deserve separate rates in this case. They have contributed 100% of the cost of the treatment plant, and they have contributed 64% of the cost of the related facilities. This is a combined contribution of 77%. On the other hand, the Wild Wings properties, which are the second group of customers at this resort community, have contributed only 36%. To argue that these two distinct groups of customers should be treated in an identical manner and subject to a single uniform rate is not supported by any evidence.
But the position of the commissioner is that you just simply failed to give sufficient evidence to prove that point. Their Exhibit 29, they felt, was not properly identified, properly supportable, and simply didn't give sufficient grounding for evidence to establish the argument that you're making.
Well, I understand that, Justice Stratton, but if we set aside the Myra and Kalina document, and I pointed this out on brief, there is overwhelming evidence in the record that deals with the contribution that has been made. For instance, if you refer to the second supplement of the appellant, which was under seal, and you refer to the balance sheet for 1996 of the Green Cove Development Group, and that appears at page 7 of the supplement number 2. That shows, for instance, that the cost of the water treatment plant was $126,144. It also shows that the applied wastewater treatment costs were $126,144. That is, the developer has recovered 100% of the cost of that plant. This is a financial document, a balance sheet that was prepared by the developer, and it has nothing to do with his tax return. There is no allegation by the commission that this balance sheet was prepared for tax purposes. In fact, it was prepared in the ordinary course of business by the developer to represent what had taken place at the Green Cove development, and it accurately shows what was done on his books. If you go down two lines on that document, you'll find site preparation costs, which includes the sewage treatment facilities, the related facilities. And again, you can see from that document that approximately 61% of those costs have been recovered. Now, between 1996 and 2000, when the Myra and Kalina document was prepared, that percentage recovery went up from 61% to 64%. But the numbers are basically the same. So again, even if we set aside the Myra and Kalina document, which the commission alleges was prepared for tax purposes, there is still overwhelming evidence in the record that shows that the condominium owners have in fact paid for this and what the percentage of contribution was. With respect to the separate rate issues, Mr. Efron testified at great length about the necessity of establishing separate rates for the condominium owners. He noted that the failure to do so would result in severe discrimination, cross-class revenue subsidization, and it would effectively require the condominium owners to pay twice for the capital cost of the facilities. Due to its importance, a portion of Mr. Efron's testimony has been set forth at page 16 and 17 of our initial brief. There is no evidence in this record, none, that refutes Mr. Efron's testimony or takes a contrary position. It was not until the commission issued its decision that we first heard a rationale for denying the condo owners' request for separate rates. The commission simply stated it believed in uniform rates for residential customers. It stated that in its decision. That's it. There was no evidence. There was no testimony. There was no documentation. Just a comment stating that they had a preference for residential rates. As I drove down to Columbus last night, I tried to think of a hypothetical or an example which would indicate the impropriety associated with the commission's decision. The following hypothetical is not perfect, but it does illustrate the problem that exists. Let's assume that two couples go into a cluster home complex and they buy the identical cluster home. The cost of that home is $250,000. One couple is elderly, they've lived in a number of homes over their life, they've amassed a lot of money, they put down a down payment of $240,000. The second couple is a young couple, they're just married, they have very little money, but from family and friends they scrape together $10,000 and they put down a $10,000 down payment. The developer of the cluster home complex congratulates them on their purchase decision and says there's a balance of $250,000 owed on these two cluster homes. He then states that at a 6% interest rate, each couple will owe $760 a month for the next 30 years. The younger couple is obviously ecstatic. They expected a mortgage payment of $1,500. The elderly couple is understandably upset. They thought that with a $240,000 down payment, their mortgage payment was going to be about $60 a month. The developer tried to settle down the elderly couple and he said, well, everything's okay because I believe in uniform mortgage rates for residential buyers. Now, I admit that hypothetical is somewhat difficult to believe that it could actually occur, but it's especially apropos in this case. That is exactly what the commission has done. They have said that it doesn't make any difference what you contribute to the capital cost of this plant. We are going to treat you in an identical manner. And that is simply unfair.
But they also said that that's just one factor to consider, that the costs of current operations and the cost of running the treatment plant and all should be considered, and that, again, your client failed to present testimony as to what those allocation of costs would be.
Well, Your Honor, with respect to the issue of the operating and maintenance costs, there is no question that the resort owners and the Wild Wings property should share in those expenses. And it's a simple matter to calculate how much sewage they are basically processing as a result of the water consumption by each group of customers. So we have no problem with that. We believe that those costs should be allocated. But with respect to the issue of capital cost, we believe that the rate should reflect the actual contributions made by the customers. And that documentation, that evidence is in the record. It's a simple calculation to make. It's not a matter of rocket science. It's merely common sense. For 15 years, I litigated rate cases before the commission. Ultimately, I became president of Toledo Edison Company and president of Centurion Energy Distribution Group. And during that entire period of time, I was intimately involved in rates and rate design issues. And I understand and I accept that in most cases, it's commonplace to give great deference to a commission decision on an issue of rate design. It can be complex, difficult, and arcane to design rates. But this case isn't one of those cases. This is a simple matter of arithmetic to take the capital contribution of the resort owners and take the capital contribution of the Wild Wings properties and calculate separate rates. It can be done on the back of an envelope. You don't need a complicated cost of service study. None of this is necessary. The facts are in the record, and I think that it can be done quite easily.
Counsel, would that run in perpetuity, or would you contemplate that there would be a later adjustment when the Wild Wings project had contributed their fair share through a differentiated rate?
Justice Pfeiffer, under Ohio law, any utility rate is going to run into perpetuity unless one of two things happens. The utility, as a result of changed expenses, changed rate base, changed investment, can come in and file a case seeking an increase in rates. If at some point in time the consumers feel that the rates are too high, they have the right to do what Resort One did in this case, which is file a complaint and then have the rates challenged. So the technical answer to your question is yes, they would continue into perpetuity, but again, they could be changed at any time to reflect changed facts and circumstances.
So if there was a differentiated rate, presumably out into the future, the costs of operating are going to go up, and there's going to be a subsequent rate case to bump up the rates all around, and that would be the time to take another look.
Absolutely. A second look could be taken at that time, but it's also possible, Your Honor, that the rates may go down. As a result of depreciation of the capital assets over time, unless there has been a new investment in sewage-related facilities. The depreciation, by its very nature, would cause those rates to decrease as time went by. So you've got competing considerations. You've got inflation, additional investment that may mitigate in favor of an increase in rates, and then you have depreciation and perhaps conservation trying to do a better job of managing and so forth that may mitigate in favor of a decrease in rates. And those factors go on and they balance each other over time. I can see I'm running into time difficulties here. Pardon, Your Honor?
You've used your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Lang. Mr. Satterwhite.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Matthew Satterwhite, representing the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. What the appellant sort of glossed over and what we have to focus on in this case and keep in mind is the result that came out of this case. The appellant received a 30% discount in their rates. Rate base was decreased significantly, 43%. The rate was decreased 46 cents from $1.55 to $1.09. But that wasn't good enough for these appellants. They come to this court, and as the appellant just told you, admit it's just a matter of arithmetic. It's just a factual question. It's a matter of what numbers do we put into that mathematical equation to determine what the outcome of the rate is going to be. The commission weighed the evidence, made a determination, and said what numbers to plug into that equation. The appellant comes to you today asking for a second bite at this apple, saying we don't like what the commission relied upon. We don't like the evidence and the factual findings it made. We ask this court to overturn those factual and represent
counsel,
the case.
Could you justify the use of a different unit base for the calculation?
Absolutely, Your Honor. There are overwhelming, the appellant raises perhaps conflicting evidence within the record, but there's overwhelming evidence within the record supporting 747. If you look at complainants on exhibits 1, 2, 4, 8, 10, 11, 12, 33, 34, 35, they all include the 747 number. And more importantly, the 747 number is included in the purchase contracts, the purchase agreements of the condominium owners. The appellant gets up and talks about, for tax purposes and for bookkeeping purposes, what the developer decided to have his books reflect, the 570 number. But the best evidence, if you want to look to see if there's contributed property at all, is to see the agreement between the developer and the purchase agreements, the owners of the condominiums. And as recent as 1993, the purchase agreements still include the 747 number. It shows the meeting of the minds between the developer and the condominium purchasers. You know, in a perfect world, the purchase agreement would say, this amount of your purchase price is going to go and be contributed property and pay off rate. But it doesn't say that. That's not included in this. The commission was left with a gap. What is included in those purchase agreements is the number 747. It's not, you know, the convenient number for tax purposes and paying off loans and looking attractive for other reasons from a business, from a developer point of view. It's the purchase, the condominium owners and the developer, the number that they agreed upon, that they both had in mind all through time was 747.
Counselor, did they end up with the 747
they
units?
They actually only ended up building 322 units. They didn't even meet the 570. But the commission had to take the precedent this court handed down in Ohio Utilities and apply numbers into that equation. Completely factual basis, completely factual application. The commission weighed all the evidence and determined 747 was the proper number to use. The fact that the appellant provides conflicting evidence should not worry this court. This court has held time and time again, it focuses on what the commission did. And if there's evidence within the record to base the commission decision upon, it defers to that finding and it will not reweigh. This court simply does not need to use its time entertaining cases in first impression or for the first time as the appellant wants you to do. The commission sat through the hearing, weighed this evidence, and on a holistic view of how rates should be set, applied that expertise and determined 747 was the proper number to use in that case. The appellant consistently asked this court to reweigh and second guess what the commission's done in matters of rate design, in matters of factual findings. This court consistently holds that it does not do that to the commission.
Counsel, I'm just reflecting back on something that you just said. I'm always trying to learn and understand how these things actually operate. I've never gone to a commission hearing. You said the commission sat through this hearing. Did they actually?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The attorney examiner sat on the case. In fact, this is a complaint case, which...
I mean, but the commission members didn't really sit through this, did they?
Well, the way the system's set up, the attorney examiner gathers the record, sits as, you know, a sort of a justice on the bench, allows evidence into the record, develops it, protects the record, and then presents that
to
the
commission. I mean, we're actually sitting here listening to you. Did the commission actually sit there and listen to this testimony?
The commission was not in the room. The commission's agent, the designee that they assigned to sit through the case.
Okay. I mean, I'm just trying to understand, and when you said they sat through this, I wondered about that.
Well, I didn't mean to mislead you. The five commissioners did not sit on the bench through this case. They have the system set up where they have an attorney examiner that gathers the evidence.
That's the way I thought it worked.
Right.
All right.
Right. And they look through that evidence, and the commissioners do have an expertise, and they see the records that typically come through as a result of the hearings, and they recognize the concepts, and they rely on the attorney examiners to see the witnesses, depend on which witnesses have more credibility and which ones don't, depend on different records that are entered into the record, and let the attorney examiner sort of give an opinion and sort of give the report.
Of the rate, you said we should look at the big picture and the ultimate conclusion. Of the rate that was finally set by the commission, which was how much?
A 46-cent decrease, $1.05 per 100, or $1.09 per 100 gallons.
And I don't even know how that fits in the scheme of norms. Is there a norm for these things? Is that high? Is that?
Well, water, that's unknown. Water and sewer are kind of its own animal. The Public Utilities Commission.
I understand that, but everybody has it, but I don't have a sense of. Is that a big number or a small number?
Well, the short answer is I don't know, because I don't know all the rates. The commission only regulates a small amount of the water and sewage facilities in Ohio.
All right.
I think.
And of that $1.05, how much is for ongoing operational expense? What's that running, this system?
I'm not sure the exact number of what the actual expenses are. Certainly that's in the record in this case. I don't know the number.
But some of the $1.05 is to cover capital.
Correct. In fact, what was before, there was not an issue.
And that seems to be what the whole dispute's about here.
Well, there's $570,000 roughly in a rate base. And that was determined from the original certification case. The appellant doesn't challenge that. The question was, in this case, the appellant was successful in proving the legal theory that we're going to apply the inference in Ohio Utilities, and what amount should we subtract from that rate base and treat as contributed. That was taken out in this case. That's what the 30% decrease, the 43% decrease in rate base was. It was decreased by that much, which ended up in the huge discount in the rates, which is a significant discount in rates. I've never seen anything that large. That happened in this case. It was struck down considerably, 43%. The appellant comes to this court and asks it to rely on other evidence within the record to strike it down even further, evidence the commission didn't rely upon, evidence the commission didn't find as credible as the other evidence in the record.
Okay, but going back to Justice O'Connor's question, the number of units actually billed is 322. And so that's what's out there, and there's nothing more. And there's this treatment plant. And presumably the developer didn't just put that there through the goodness of his heart, right?
I think that's a safe assumption, yes, Your Honor.
All right. So then presumably the 322 residents and the commercial development paid for this.
Well, it's a matter of how much have they paid for it, Your Honor. The Ohio Utilities case, which is the standard that the commission found the appellant met.
Well, did the developer say, you know, this thing's going south, I'm going to put $300,000 into this just to get out of here?
Well, I think if you look at the assumption that Your Honor raises, that the developer is trying to make money on anything it builds, that's what developers do. Ohio Utilities requires a presumption that, or an inference if met by someone, that a certain portion of the improved lots is going to go to pay off the portion of the rate base, the portion of the utilities plant. They only built 322 here. They didn't recover the full portion. So there's a certain amount left undone. What the appellant confuses is the focus of what regulatory law does. It doesn't focus on, I was the first one to build here, therefore I never have to pay again anything into rate base. That's not the way it works. It focuses on what the utility invests, and the developer at one point invested a certain amount, and then that became the utility. There's a certain lump sum left unrecovered, and the utility has the right to recover that in rates. Just because the person who bought condominium number one paid their apportionment under high utilities doesn't mean they're not responsible for the rate base unrecovered by the utility. And as the utility grows, it benefits that original condominium owner. The more customers it has and the more usage it has, it's likely the rates will go down. And so as it grows, that benefits the customer. But for the appellant to stand up and say, Resort One was in there first, they paid off the actual footprint plant, they're done, is a misunderstanding of how rate making and utility law works. It simply doesn't go that way. The developer, the utility, has the right to recover its investment in the plant. There's a certain amount left unrecovered. That was the factual matter the commission was left to decide. And the commission determined this was the simple way to decide it. You can apply these numbers, these credible numbers that both the customers and the developer knew, the 747, to plug into the mathematical factual equation and determine how much to take out of rate base. That's all the commission did in this case. The appellant admits it's all a factual matter here. It's all a matter of what numbers do we want to use. The commission determined that, and this court does not need to reweigh that.
So then how much is the developer taking out over time?
How much are they taking out at this time?
Taking out over time with this rate set this way.
I'm not a tax attorney, great with numbers, but the 570 that was rate base, the 43% of that was taken out. So, you know, the 57% that's left, is that correct? 57% that's left, that's actually what's left in rate base of the 570 that they have the right, the commission found was never recovered and should go into rates.
All right.
And will that then at some point be recovered and they'll see a reduction when that capital is designated amount is paid off?
Yes, Your Honor. It won't be treated as contributed property, but they will recover over time as the plant depreciates and as the utility goes out. That at one point, that will be recovered and rate base will be recovered.
And that is done automatically or at the initiation of the resort residents for a recalculation of their rate?
It would take a filing at the commission, and that
so
can
it's
be done.
Not automatically built into this rate structure that it's projected based on this usage, these amount of customers, and the numbers that are evident now that there's an automatic decrease based on the return of capital to the utility.
That's correct. The statutes aren't set up where we can say there's a
Pardon
date.
Me?
The statutes the legislature gave us are not set up that on a date certain we declare rate base has been recovered and therefore the rates are changed. But there are many avenues. A utility can file a rate case. The commission staff can file a complaint case. The customers can file a complaint case. There's many avenues within the statutes to allow that to be reflected. And I think if you look at the filing made by the company in this case as an amicus, they show that they're already putting significant new costs into the plant, and they might be in soon for another rate case. And everything is looked at when it comes in for a rate case. The staff.
What was it that generated the decrease that you told us the owners already had?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
What was it that generated the decrease in the rate from $1.55 to $1.09? You told us they already got. What triggered that?
The Ohio Utilities case. The inference in Ohio Utilities was met by the appellants to show that a certain amount. The utility all along and the developer contended that they never intended to take anything. There wasn't any intention of contributed property. But the appellants presented evidence.
But isn't the essence of the argument being made that that calculation should have been a greater decrease? Isn't that what we're really talking about here?
The appellant would like this court to reweigh the evidence and rely on documents the commission didn't rely upon.
Rather than reweigh, I think they want us to remand it so the commission can recalculate using different numbers. Isn't that what this case is about?
Well, that remand would take this court overturning factual findings of the commission and saying.
What if those findings are against the manifest weight of the evidence?
Well, this court obviously has the power to declare that, but the commission doesn't feel that it is. There's, at best, conflicting evidence within this record.
But
the standard
but you
is,
at least agree that there was enough there to reduce it from $1.55 to $1.09, and the difference you have with the owners is that it should have been reduced even further because those numbers were incorrectly applied.
Absolutely. We agree on the legal issues. It's a matter of the factual issue of how much it should come down. And the commission did not feel, they feel they provided the appellant with a significant decrease, and that's what the evidence proves. And the commission has to weigh, you know, the interest of the utility, the customer, and make sure the utility can provide service in the future. Perhaps a greater decrease, as the amicus statement shows.
Well, is this decrease of $1.09, is that prospective or retrospective?
Prospective only. The commission has no power to retrospectively adjust the rates.
Thank you.
All right, Councilor, for the purposes of the rate reduction and the determination of future rates, they're using the 322 unit number, correct?
Correct.
Yet they use the 747, was that the correct number, 757?
Right, that's
or
the
40,
number.
What's?
Yes.
747. For the calculation, the allocation of the original capital that per unit, correct?
Correct.
Explain that to me, how you can have an amount that is divided by the 747 and decrease what the actual contribution per unit, and then when you're figuring the rates, you're compressing that and putting the burden on 322. I don't understand that.
No, it's not putting the burden on 322, and that's what happened in this case is we have the 570,000 plus in rate base. That's not questioned. We have what the commission found, the 747 number that they intended to make, and this is the straight application of the Ohio Utilities case. So condominium number one, it's a question of how much money did they pay, how much money did the utility recover from them? And they recovered, if you take the 747 and divide that into the 570, that gives you a certain amount of number. That's all Ohio Utilities says they had to pay. That was their share. They didn't have to pay for the other units that weren't built. But the amount that's remaining after that, when you take that number per unit, multiply that times 322, that's what this court says is the presumption they have recovered already from rate base. But that's obviously not the 747 that were intended, so there's a certain amount left unrecovered. And under utility law, rate making, the utility has the right to still recover that investment in plant. It's not that the individual condo owners paid more, it's that they paid their portion under Ohio Utilities, and now what's left to be thrown into rates to be spread across the complete customer class. And if more customers are added on, that'll be recovered from them as well. That
Thank
help?
You, Mr. Satterway.
Thank you. Ask that you affirm the commission's factual findings. Thank you.
Mr. Lang, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few brief comments. First of all, Mr. Satterwhite indicated at the opening of his comments that there were many documents in the record that contained the 747 number. True, we admit that. They were all documents that were generated prior to 1987. In 1987, that's when the developer changed his mind and recovered his units over his costs over 570 units. Second, Justice Pfeiffer asked where these rates kind of fall in terms of rates throughout the state of Ohio. They're among the highest in the state. Ohio EPA issues a report on wastewater treatment plants that the court can take judicial notice of, and it has about 525 systems in it. And the average rate in that runs about 36 to 40 cents. When the commission initially established these rates, they were at $1.55. They did bring it down to $1.09, and we agree in part with that decision, but the rates are still astronomical. Now, I'm not suggesting that just because the rates are high, there should be a reduction.
Is there any provision for retroactive reduction that you know of?
Justice O'Donnell, the KECO case in Ohio has adopted the filed rate doctrine. And it basically states that as long as the utility collects the rates that were in the commission-approved tariff, there can be no refund. Okay, but that case is a matter of judicial interpretation. There is nothing in Title 49 of the revised code that says there can't be a refund. And just to give you an example of that, For instance, 4909.16 is the section of the revised code that deals with emergency rate making. In that section, there is no provision that says there can be a refund. There's no provision that says there can't be a refund. But as a matter of interpretation, the commission has held that a refund is permissible in an emergency case if the permanent rates are set at a level lower than the emergency rates collected. So there can be a refund. That's a matter of judicial interpretation.
What's your strongest argument as to why we should divert from KECO?
Your Honor, the strongest argument is because the developer in this case has deceived the commission and its staff. Basically, they filed standard
deceived.
They have filed standard filing requirements in 1999 that said there was zero contribution from customers. Wasn't a dispute about the amount, as we're talking about today. They said there was a zero contribution for the customers. The president of the utility then filed an affidavit in that certification case, and that's reproduced in our supplement, which basically said the condominium owners have contributed nothing for the capital costs of these facilities. That was false. In addition, the developer did not provide any of the income statements or balance sheets of the development corporation to the commission or its staff. Okay, this was all held back. And in circumstances such as these, we believe that there should be an interpretation of KECO by the court that would allow for a refund. Because if there can't be a refund in this case, under the extreme circumstances of this case, there will never be a refund. And the problem with that is it encourages a situation where there's no good faith negotiations of what the rates should be. I mean, basically, the utility is going to keep those rates in effect, collect them as long as they possibly can, try to delay a complaint case, and then they know that there's not going to be a refund, so why should they negotiate with a group of customers that come in and talk to them? A perfect example of that in this case is when we filed a scheduling document with the commission. Discovery had already gone on for a long period of time. It was late 2001. We asked the commission to schedule a hearing in this case in January of 2002. The utility came in, and they've got all the documents. We're the people doing discovery. And they said the case shouldn't start until August of 2002. Now, if that had happened, we probably wouldn't have had a commission decision until 2004. I mean, the utility just doesn't have an interest in negotiating or trying to be reasonable if they know they're going to collect those rates and there can't be a refund. So we believe that public policy also mitigates in favor of a refund in a case where there are unusual factual circumstances like this case.
Thank you, Mr. Lang. You've used your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.